Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. We're finishing off our 2018 IMSA Champions Podcast, speaking with Doug Feehan, Program Manager for Corvette Racing, coming off a rather incredible 2018 season, where their championship-winning entry, piloted by Jan Magnussen, Antonio Garcia, did not win a single race. The sister entry, driven by Oliver Gavin and Tommy Milner, did. But yeah, we have a very unique situation here. That's actually what Doug and I open with. How do you win a championship without winning a race? Well, very, very special circumstances. Also, very special people within that Corvette Racing team. The Pratt and Miller engineering effort that facilitates everything on behalf of General Motors. So, always fun speaking with Doug. He's definitely sports car Yoda. I refer to my friend Mike Hull as IndyCar Yoda. So, definitely a man who certainly speaks in wise words and also very strong team-based axioms. So, hope you enjoy this. About 15, 20 minutes long. Not too long, but definitely have some fun. Gain some further insights into how they ended up beating Ford, beating Porsche, beating BMW to the 2018 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship GTLM title, their frickin' 13th, I believe, spanning back to 1999. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, also on Google Play, and a variety of other aggregators, as well as our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. All right, off we go with Doug Feehan, Corvette Racing Program Manager, the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. So, Doug, I'm thinking back to all that Corvette Racing has achieved. I'm thinking about the years where Corvette Racing raced against itself and went more or less undefeated in GT1. I've thought about the years where you've earned championships by conquering all the big events, the big endurance races, plus some of the others. And then I come back to this year's result, where Spanish Superman Antonio Garcia and Jan Magnussen are our new GT Le Mans champions without having won a single dang race whatsoever. Where was this in the script, first of all? Who came up with this crazy idea?
Well, you know, sometimes we simply have to kind of roll with the tide, as they like to say down in Alabama. You know, the precursor to this, the groundwork, I think, was laid last year when it went largely unreported, but the three car completed every lap on the lead lap of every single race, including the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Yeah.
That in and of itself, for a guy like myself that's been around this for his entire lifetime, is as great an achievement as anything in motorsports. It's unbelievable. As I talk to you right now, I'm just shaking my head in awe of that level of accomplishment. And that, I think, really is the embodiment of what our entire spirit and operational philosophy is at Corvette Racing. I mean, very rarely do we go to any event and show up as the fastest car. But our operational philosophy has always been, during testing, during qualifying, during our entire time that we spend running the car other than in competition, is to develop a vehicle that's durable, reliable, and has a performance level that allows it to compete. And our ability to finish races at all costs, that's always been really what our central theme has been, our focus. And I think this year was the embodiment of that in coming through with a championship, with a three car having won zero races. I mean, you know, we were on the podium, I don't know what it was, 8-9 times, you know, with that car. Those guys just did an amazing job of keeping the car in the hunt. We had a few events, obviously, where there were occurrences that precluded it from finishing on the podium. But that level of consistency, that level of never giving up, that level of just constantly going back, working harder, finding a way to be competitive, is what delivered that championship.
So looking at the numbers, which you already alluded to, you had 8 podiums from 11 races, so that tells the tale, right? If you're on the podium 8 times out of 11 rounds, you're vying for a championship, if not champion, when, you know, whether you've won or lost, I should say whether you've won or not, if you yes. are in the top three that many times, that's going to earn you a lot of points. The other thing that really stood out to me as well, Doug, is your primary rival, or the entry that ended up being your primary rival, that the 4GT effort of Ryan Briscoe and Richard Westbrook, started the year with a big win at Daytona, had a podium at Long Beach, won again at Mosport CTMP, won for a third time at Road America. So three big wins during the first eight races. But you guys also had seven consecutive podiums from Mid-Ohio through Monterey. That, to me, is just, of all the things you guys did this year, and I'm not blowing smoke, I'm just saying, seven consecutive podiums, that's some pretty rarefied air, man.
Well, when you consider the level of competition, it's extraordinary. I mean, it's not like we're out here, you know, club racing. I mean, we've got full factory efforts that are bringing quality vehicles, quality engineering, and quality competition. And you've got to have your game together. In all fairness, though, I think when we look at the continuity of our program, of our drivers, of our teams, of our crew chief, of our engineering, you know, these guys have been through the battles. We don't panic, you know. We don't get confused. We've been through the drills 1,000 times. It's just shoulder to the wheel, and I think that this year's Petit Le Mans was a prime example of that. You know, an unfortunate experience that Antonio had coming out of the pits while leading the event. Okay, an event in which you only really had to finish. Only had to really finish. You know. To win the championship. I mean, I'm not sure that other teams have been through drills like that. Not that they couldn't have accomplished the same feat, but they probably haven't lived through that experience. We've been through that drill before. So to pull the car behind the wall, have our stuff ready, as we always do, being able to go in there in 3 or 4 minutes, be able to change the nose, get out only a couple laps down, within striking distance of the Ferrari, managed to catch and pass the Ferrari. There was nobody in our pit box when that happened who thought that it was over.
Mm.
Nobody. We just thought, well, let's get back, get this nose on, get back out there, and see how far up the chart we can go. And then you know that you have your teammate up there working the other end of the deal. So, you know, we're not only working from the bottom up with the three car, but we're working at the top of the event with the four car as well. We've been through that before. And that's only because we've spent 20 years, you know, doing it here. Not that other teams aren't capable of it, because they certainly are, but they, in all likelihood, have never been through that before. They've not had that experience. And experience is what really brings it home. Understanding where you are, understanding where you need to go, comprehending how to get there, and always having the confidence and faith that you can get the job done. These guys believe in one another. We've been through the battles together. We've been through the wars together. And I think that race really told the story.
I don't know if you enjoyed, I'm thinking you didn't enjoy this in the same way I enjoyed it, Doug, but just give me your thoughts on it. I actually liked the fact that Antonio made that mistake coming out of the pits, because it reminded us he was human. It's been a long time since I've looked at Antonio Garcia. Mousy guy, doesn't say a lot, you know. I mean, just very, you know, simple guy. I don't mean
very
dumb.
Quiet,
I don't mean
very
dumb,
reserved.
But just, you know, if he's a conversationalist of one. I just look at him, have always looked at him as a little bit of an alien, because he doesn't really engage with us, meaning the rest of the planet, too much. But the one place where he is happiest, and I think whatever his alien DNA fits best, is inside a race car. And when, you know, as you mentioned, all we got to do is just finish the race in a decent position, it's ours. Leaving the effing pits and stuffing the thing into the wall, it was like, okay, well, that's added some drama. B, yeah, like you said, I'm fairly confident the boys are going to get the car turned around quickly. But C, holy crap, maybe he is human after all. I don't know if you had a similar chuckle, but there was like, okay, there's hope for the rest of us. Even Garcia can make a mistake.
Here's what I wanted to happen, okay? I knew, and you know, it's the quiet guys you got to look out for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because it's all they're doing is wheels turning inside, and they're not showing their hand. They're playing poker the entire time. Let me tell you, this guy is one of the most race-savvy individuals I have ever met in my lifetime. He is always figuring the edge, always figuring the angle. Pretty amazing, quite frankly. He's very, very impressive on his mental racecraft. My dream was to have him go and just win the race, put it out there and say, here's why we're champions, okay? And we had the opportunity to do that a couple of times during the year. We had some the fuel anomaly at Laguna. We had another race where it might have been Mosport, I think, with an inopportune yellow flag that came out. Those are two races that we really had cars, drivers, teams, and strategy to win the event, and we didn't. But that's racing,
yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to give him a chance to actually bring it home in that event, win the thing, and just say, okay, you know, we've put the frosting on the cake here. That was my level of disappointment with him. Okay, that we couldn't end it that way. But if you had to end it in another way, if it had to come to fruition without him dominating, winning, doing what we did as a team, as one team, that's what made that win so gratifying.
We also found out Garcia's a freaking drama queen. I mean, right? You know, the guy's like, it's too easy. It's too boring. Come on, we're going to spice it up.
Well, you know, when you're dominating the race, you got fans going home early. He was just thinking of a way to keep fans sticking around for a while to the end of the race.
Big picture guy. I love that about him.
Yeah, it's great. We made for great TV.
Last question or two for you, Doug. And we've touched on this in recent or past stories about championships, but this team's been together for a long time. There's a lot of faces that are not just familiar, but very familiar, turning wrenches on the car, inside turning the steering wheel and such. At times, you can see where either a bit of complacency sets in or finding that same very bright spark and maintaining it throughout the year. It can be a little bit of a challenge year after year with a championship-winning team, especially when you've got driver pairings that have been together too. What is it that you saw within the overall entry and also within Yan and Antonio where time, all those things I mentioned, really seemed like this was not an issue and was just, you know, a fresh new pursuit to go after instead of ho-hum, let's go get title 13 or whatever it might have been?
Here's the thing that drives the whole train. Right. And that's pride.
Hmm.
Right. Personal pride in not only what we've accomplished and who we are, but in setting the bar so that when other teams show up at the racetrack, they're not there just to win the race. They're there to beat Corvette. I think we're at that level. And I think not the teams don't enjoy winning, but I think it adds an element of pride to themselves when they know they've beat us. And I think that's, you know, that raises all boats. So I'm pretty proud of the fact that we have that pride level. And that's what continues to fuel and drive this team. Early on in this program, I sat them all down and I told them, every time we go out, guys, we're writing a new page in Corvette history. Remember that. All the eyes of the Corvette Nation are on us, as well as the rest of the competitive world. We need to lead by example. And over the years, the decades, I think they've done that on many, many, many different occasions and on many, many different levels. And when you have that level of internal pride, there is no other motivation that you need. That is the largest single motivating force in knowing who we are, what we've accomplished, and that we want to continue to be the team that all other teams emulate to be.
Let's close on this. We've seen some photographs on the old internet that there might be a a new Corvette racing vehicle in the offerings at some point in the future. Of course, I wouldn't ask you about that. I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about. But often when we hear about manufacturers saying, hey, we need to get a new bullet ready, it's because the current one's a little lumped up, a little older, a little slow, a little something. Y'all have the oldest, at least as I recall, the oldest chassis in terms of when it debuted in GTLM, and yet you've just managed to win the championship to be the most consistent. The sister entry as well with Ollie Gavin and Tommy Milner, they did win this year, had, what, 4 or 5 podiums and whatnot. So, I mean, overall, the Corvette C7R, despite its age, still delivering, still producing. Just talk a little bit about that, Doug, because that's often not the case at this stage, right? Hey, we got to get something new. This old battle axe is worn out.
Well, yes. There's some truth to that. And I think it speaks very well to the overall design and layout of the current 7th generation Corvette. Yes, it's front engine. Yes, it's rear drive. Yes, we use a 2-valve engine. And to that I say, yeah, we're still winning races. We're still winning championships. And on occasion, we even win a pole. The value in that is that we fully understand the vehicle we have, and over time, we've been able to develop something that has a level of durability and reliability and repairability that is essentially unequaled by our competition. Hmm. All right? What happened to that car, if it happened to any of our competition, I can guarantee you, all right, that they would not have had that car out and ready to go in that time frame in which we did. Just wouldn't have. But when you have a vehicle that that's taxi tested tough, you can have altercations on track and not have any negative repercussions. When there are negative repercussions, you have the ability to get it repaired and get it repaired in relatively short periods of time and return to competition. And endurance racing, that's critical. There is, from a competitive level, there is no shortcoming to what we're currently competing with. And to add to that, obviously, we have a balance of performance that comes into play. So, and by any measure, by those harshest critics of BOP, okay, I think the level of competition that you saw at Petit Le Mans, when you think of it from an engineering exercise, utilizing 20 different drivers, utilizing mid-engine, utilizing front engine, utilizing turbo, naturally aspirated, 4-liter, 5-liter, 5.5-liter, boxer engines, V8s, V6s. If you were charged as an engineering company to go and take these vehicles and get them to run and qualify within 3 or 4 tenths of a second of one another, you would say that's impossible to do. You can't do it. It can't be achieved. Don't be ridiculous. Yet that's what the BOP at Petit Le Mans had achieved. And I think those results were moved right forward into the event itself. When you saw the on-track performance, how close it was. I mean, these cars were nose to tail for 10 hours.
Yeah.
And with nobody with a clear advantage. I mean, maybe somebody makes a tire selection at one point. Maybe somebody short fills gets to the front. But there was nobody driving by anybody else. I mean, you had to really, really, really have it figured out what you were doing, which brings strategy and driving capability into the picture at a level heretofore unknown, because there was no vehicle that was dominant. So, regardless of what vehicle you bring, given enough time, they're going to get you balanced to where you can be competitive with it. So, I mean, if you went out and built some brand new rocket ship, all right, and brought it in, and it was 2 seconds a lap faster than everybody else, that's not going to last very long. I mean, they're going to fix that. So there's nothing wrong with what we're running. I love this car. I love this car. You can't hurt the thing. and it's plenty quick to win.
Well, I love the thing, too. And that's just speaking as a fan, not a Not an unbiased journalist, of course. Just a fan.
No, of course.
Just
no,
a fan
no.
with a podcast.
Well, this it makes a great noise, doesn't it?
Well, yes. And someone who makes a steady effort to capture trackside racing sounds as well. We'll make sure that we always have this C7R to listen to. Well, thank you, my friend. This was a fun year. It was really interesting seeing these two dynamics play out. Obviously, you would have loved to have won multiple races with the title-winning car, but still, such an interesting dynamic to watch between the Ford entry going and getting a couple of big wins, 3 wins out of 11, but obviously not enough podium visits overall, versus a team that might not have broken through to victory lane, but was able to just hammer everyone else into submission with that consistency. So just, I think, another really cool chapter added to that Corvette racing book.
This year was the closest racing that we've had, and I think next year bodes even tighter competition. That's what the fans pay to see. That's what we want to see. That keeps everybody motivated. When you show up at a racetrack, regardless of the colors you're wearing, and you know you got a chance to win, that's what makes it fun.
And that was our man, Doug Feehan. Sounded like he was at a racetrack. Sounded like that might have been maybe the twin-turbo V6 rumored power plant in that Corvette C8R we think we're going to see at some point next year. But again, you know, Corvette folks are really good at not talking about the things they don't want to talk about. I've learned that over the years. So while posing all kinds of questions about that might have seemed like prime opportunity, they know the dance. I know the dance. Why waste their time when I know they wouldn't answer? So, anyways, hopefully you enjoyed that with Doug. He's always one of the good ones. And I'm also hoping to spend some time with Doug during the off season, doing a longer podcast, more about his life and career. Very interesting guy. Done a lot of interesting things well before his Corvette racing days. All right. I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.